Greetings, everybody. I just want to first announce to you that before the Bible study tonight, I'm going to do about a 15-minute televised talk that will be shown in all the feast sites on the opening night. And it'll be quite brief. When I've been making the circuit, speaking at every feast site, of course, I had to give a full sermon on the opening night wherever I was, or I couldn't get around to enough different sites. In the 8 days, I've been visiting as many as, I believe, 12 sites in the 8 days. And some cases I had to speak twice at two different feast sites the same day. So I'll record this first, and then we'll have a Bible study. I'm a little disappointed that there's so few people out tonight. Someone told me they didn't know I would be here. And that is very discouraging and very disheartening. I tell you, brethren, I'm going to write an article on the purpose of the church. I don't think many of our people know it. Or else most of our people just want to finally become ashes under the soles of the feet of a few of us someday in the lake of fire. We're not taking this thing seriously. We're in the very last days. There isn't much time left. And I tell you, the reaction is pretty discouraging. This church has been going down, down, down. I can't bear it all up single-handed and alone. I've got to have some of you to back me up. I get letters from one now and then. We're back of you 100%. Well, I need more of 100% of the people to be back of me. This church has been letting down spiritually. We're told to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together, and so much the more as we see the day approaching. And I guess we don't see it approaching, do we? Well, I think I may talk on that a little bit, and I will announce now that the next time I'm here, I can't tell you now, it'll be next Friday night or not, but the next time I'm here, I'm going to get back to prophecy. Where are we now in prophecy? I understand that our ministers, not any of them, have been preaching on prophecy for the last 2 years. It seemed like we've all got discouraged. Maybe we didn't understand the prophecies. Maybe they're not being fulfilled. Maybe they're not working out. Well, I'll explain that. It's a lot later than you think. But God has been holding up things. You ever read in the 7th chapter of Revelation how when we get to the place that we haven't reached yet, that'll be after the Great Tribulation, and after God sends these terrific, mind-shattering, signs in the heavens, and the stars, the sun, and the moon, to sort of shock this world into realizing that there is a God after all, and he's beginning to intervene. And instead of the things going right on that are scheduled to go at that time, and the last plagues and the second coming of Christ, God sends an angel and says, wait a minute, hold up. I've still got something else that we got to hold up until it gets done. Do you know that that's what happened after 1972, and God has held things up until this job gets done? And so we get discouraged, and we decide, well, my Lord delays his coming. Maybe he's not going to come at all. Now, what I'm saying is for the empty seats that are not filled. Obviously, it's not for you people who are here, and it's just too bad that the ones who need it aren't here to hear it. It was very disheartening to me to find that we were going to suspend the Bible studies for the summer. Now, where are the ministers? We used to have the front row filled with ministers. I don't see one. Is there a minister here? But I can't see you over there. You know, I'm glad there's someone here. A lot of the ministers think, oh, well, I don't need to go unless I speak. And if it's that Herbert Armstrong speaking, I don't want to hear him anymore anyhow. I don't know whether that's what you think or not. I know none of you would be here if God hadn't used me. I wonder how many of you think you would be here if I hadn't been used. You know, if you do, you better think twice. And brethren, let me tell you, I've been working harder these last 3 or 4 weeks than I've worked at any time in the last 15 years. I'm getting more done. I'm getting more accomplished. And it's pretty hard to go against everything with everybody just laying down and does nothing. We need to wake up, I tell you, but if you don't wake up, I can't do it for you. Just God have mercy on your soul if you don't. That's all I can say. And some of you are going to need it. Well, now I want to get my voice down a little bit, if I can, for this. Because you will hear this again on the television screen the opening night of the feast, wherever you are. And I might mention now, before I start, that I am planning, tentatively, if God is willing, to be at the site they tell me is the largest of the feast sites at St. Petersburg, Florida, for the opening night and for the first holy day. And they probably will have to hear this a day or so later, or else not hear it at all, because I will be there in person on that opening night. And I won't say much more than I'm saying here, because I'm not going to preach a whole sermon on that. Now, I believe it's a Sunday night. I'll have to check that with the calendar again. But and then preach a whole sermon the next day. But naturally, I'm not making any effort to cover all of the feast sites in the United States and Canada again this year, as I have done at least one feast site in Canada several years up until last year. And last year, I was just starting to recover from complete heart failure, and I wasn't able to attend the feast at all. But God has brought me back, and I'm here, and I tell you, the day is coming, and Christ made the church all prepared and ready, and I think we're a long ways from that. I don't know how to wake you people up. I frankly don't. I just sort of give up. Now, a few men with the television screens are ready. I'll open up, and we're going to have to pretend that this is the opening night now of the Feast of Tabernacles, if you will, for just about 15 minutes. Well, greetings, everybody. Once again, let me ask, as I used to ask time and time again, after year after year at these festivals, why are we here? I wonder if you realize that this is the largest annual church conclave or convention on the face of the earth. Now, there was at one time, I think, a larger number of people than we have at any one site meeting in the Rose Bowl. I don't remember whether it was Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, or who, but there was something. But that was only one time, and it didn't happen next year or the year before. But ours is a festival that comes year after year in feast sites all over this world. And we have almost 100,000 attending in the combined feast sites all over the various parts of this world. Now, these annual festivals were ordained of God, not by man. And if God did it, he had a reason. And if God did it, it's very important that we realize that reason. Very important. Now, why did he ordain these festivals? Because our God, our Creator, knew that his people need to be reminded year after year of what is the most important thing in the lives of us who are his people, to be reminded of what God has prepared for us if we love him. Heads of big business, big banks, leaders in every walk of life in the world. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. Even as it is written, now listen, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man, the things that God has prepared for them that love him. How does knowledge get into your mind? How do you come to know anything at all? How do you know everything you ever came to know? Well, it's about 95 to 98% through your eyes and ears, and the rest will come through the sense of smell, taste, or feel. But it continues, God has revealed them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. And so, these things are revealed by God, the things that God has in store for us. Now, to us, these festivals are the most important thing in our lives. But the last few years, we've been getting lazy. We're getting into the Laodicean condition. And that is a condition in which Jesus Christ says he will spew us out of his mouth. You spit out of your mouth things you don't want in there any longer. And I think we better wake up. To us, these festivals are important, but many of us are not considering them any longer as important as we ought. Now, last year, I heard reports of some feast sites that not one word during the whole 8 days was spoken by any minister of telling why they were there, what the festivals mean, what is the meaning or the purpose of having these festivals anyway. And some wrote, I could get better sermons if I'd stayed at home than to have gone. I tell you, we need to wake up, and the ministry needs to wake up. God's ministers need a new spirit of urgency and power. Jesus Christ, the living head of the church, has been moving swiftly these last couple of months, the 3-4 months, to put his church back on the track. And so much the more because we now see the day approaching when Christ is going to appear. We're in that generation. And we're the ones that are getting sleepy. And we're asleep at the switch, brethren. And we're deciding that my Lord delayeth his coming. Let's slumber and sleep. And read in the 25th chapter of Matthew, while some of them were slumbering and sleeping like that, the Lord came. And the door was shut. And they pounded on the door and tried to get in. But Christ is going to say to those, go away, I never knew you. You haven't known me, and you haven't cared. Well, I have assigned to the ministers speaking here and at the various feast sites, the imperative obligation to preach the meaning and the purpose of these festivals, not only the Feast of Tabernacles, but all of the festivals that show the master plan of God working out his purpose here below. Now, I plan to speak on this very theme tomorrow on the first of the holy days. Let me say that this is the 51st year of these festivals for me. I first began keeping them with my wife of 50 years that was taken from me in death now, way over 11 years ago, but God has given me another wife finally. But she and I began keeping these festivals alone for 7 years because we told the brethren that I had discovered that they were ordained forever and that we should be keeping them now, that Christ did, the early apostles did, the early church did. And when I told the brethren in the church then, and they were the church that we find described as the Sardis church in the Bible, the one that was spiritually dead, they laughed me to scorn. That's all. And they would not keep these festivals, and so far as I know, those same people have not begun to keep them even to this day. And my wife and I kept them for 7 years until the parent church of this Philadelphia era of the church was founded in August of 1933 in Eugene, Oregon. And that is the parent church. And so I've been continuing to keep these festivals for 51 years. Now, I know that I'm the only one here that can say that, but I just want to tell you how much gratitude it gives me to see that it has grown into what is now the largest festival or convention or conclave held by any church or religious organization or group on the face of this earth every year. So now there will be announcements. I will see you again tomorrow. And so I will say good night until tomorrow. Now, maybe we can get back to what I thought I would bring you tonight as a Bible study. And maybe I should have gone right into the prophecies, but I had something else that I thought I would go through. Did you ever wonder about the temple that Christ is coming to? Now, you read in Malachi, the first chapter, the third chapter, in the first verse, "Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me." Now, that messenger was a human messenger. And for Christ's first coming, you'll read in the first chapter of Mark, and beginning with verses 1, 2, and 3, and along in there, that it was John the Baptist preparing the way for the first coming. "And the Lord, whom you seek, which is Jesus Christ, shall suddenly come to his temple." Well, what about that? Where is that temple? Now, I remember we were discussing that over at Brickett Wood some 10 years ago. And we said, well, is there any indication that the Jews are going to build a temple? And there was a rumor that maybe the Jews, when they took Jerusalem in the Six-Day War, and that was back, in fact, that was just after my wife died in the year 1967, the Israelis took over the old city of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, you know, like the city of Berlin, had been a divided city up to that time. And many of us wondered at that time if the Jews were going to demolish the Dome of the Rock, which is the large Muslim temple there, and build a temple for to which Christ would come. But I don't know why we didn't understand. It's very, very plain in the Bible about that temple. And I thought maybe it would be good if I would explain that to you tonight. Now, these books in the Old Testament are not so-called Old Testament stuff. They were written for us. I'm going now to the book of Haggai. What I just read was in the last book in the New Testament, in Malachi. But these books were written at a time when both Israel and Judah were in captivity, and the only people at Jerusalem of that small contingent, comparatively small, of the Jews who had been sent back 70 years after the destruction of the temple, which means about, let me see, that would be right around 475 B.C., to build the second temple. And as a matter of fact, this book of Haggai talks about the building of that second temple. As it starts out, you may think this is just some old history. Oh, no, it isn't. This is a prophecy for now. So let's listen. In the second year, this is Haggai, it's about the second or third to the last book in the Old Testament. In the second year of Darius the king, and this was the Persian, Medo-Persian Empire now, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Eternal to Haggai the prophet, unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel. Now Zerubbabel was the governor of Judah, and to Joshua, who was the high priest and the son of Josedek, saying, thus speaketh the Eternal of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. You know that that's a prophecy for today, and that that's what we're saying today. And when you see what the Lord's house is, you will see that what I've been saying to you up to now is absolutely true. Then came the word of the Eternal by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house why waste? The temple, they were sent there to build the second temple of God. And that's the one that was still there extant at the time that Jesus Christ came. Only the Roman King Herod, who was king over that part of the Roman Empire, occupied by the Jews at that time, had added some to it and enlarged it somewhat. But it was the same temple. Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Many of us are more concerned about the houses in which we live than the house of God that I'm going to show you about. Now, therefore, thus saith the Eternal of hosts, consider your ways. Now, this is true today. Notice this. Ye have sown much, but you bring in little. Ye eat, but you have not enough. Ye drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm, and he that earneth wages to put it into a bag of holes. Do you recognize that as being true today? And inflation is going up and the value of the dollar is going down. Now, there was supposed to be a postal strike today. It's been postponed a day or two. And we have taken precautions that if that goes into effect, our Gulfstream II airplane will go around and pick up the tithe money of the people at various places. Local churches will have someone take it by automobile to each of these places. And we'll have our own postal service if they're going to strike. And God has provided us with a way to do it. And where there's a will, there is a way, brethren. The only thing is, I think we lack a lot of that will. Now continue verse 7. Thus saith the Lord, or the Eternal of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Eternal. Now he's talking here literally about the second temple that was built at that time. As I say, about 475 years before Christ. You looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Eternal of hosts? Because of mine house that is waste, and ye run everyone to his own house. Now, you're going to see pretty soon that the house it's speaking of is the church of God. And the work of the church of getting this gospel out. And we're growing weary, and we don't want to work on building this church, which is the temple. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. God sends the rain on the just and the unjust alike, and God can control the weather. Now, I don't mean that he always does every little bit of a change in the weather. God has set laws in motion that pretty much work automatically and all of that, but God has sent lightning to strike certain ones dead that... I guess we're better off than they were to go on living, and you did for a good purpose. And I call for a drought upon the land and upon the mountain and upon the corn and upon the new wine and upon the oil and upon that which the ground brings forth and upon men and upon cattle and upon the labor of the hands. Then Zerubbabel and Joshua, the high priest, with all of the remnant of the people, this was just the remnant of Judah that had remained now, that had gone back over there to build this second temple, obeyed the voice of the Eternal their God, and the words of Haggai, the prophet, as the Eternal their God had sent him, and the people did fear before, and I hope that's true of us today, that we really will. They did fear before the Eternal. Then spake Haggai, the Eternal's messenger, in the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, says the Eternal. Look, brethren, if we are only with him, let me tell you, the living Christ is with us. We've noticed attacks in the public press. Not only our two newspapers here in Los Angeles and Pasadena, but in Time magazine and other magazines all over the world. There's been a lot about us in the daily newspapers in London, England. And people read about us all over. But let me tell you, whenever something like that happens, I don't worry about it, but I do go to the throne of grace. I do go to my knees and go to Jesus Christ, the living head of this church. And he has delivered us every time. And he will. But we've got to believe that he is living, that he is here. While I'm thinking about it, let me tell you something else that has come to my mind. I'm going to have to write something, get it into the good news on this line, and try to get it to the whole church as soon as I can. There are too many people that are wondering, well, now, who's going to take over if Mr. Armstrong dies? I'm supposed to die right away. Because, of course, a lot of people do die before they're as old as I am now. But whether or not I die is going to depend on whether the living Christ lets me or whether he keeps me alive. And maybe we'll see something about that before we get through right here. Someone says, well, have I appointed someone to follow and take my place? The answer is no. That is not my place to do. I have no authority to do any such thing. You know, it's a great deal like the woman who was the mother of two of Christ's apostles, and she came to Jesus. She said, well, Lord, when you come into your kingdom, I want to make a request. Please let one of my sons be on your right hand and the other on your left hand when you come in your kingdom. He says, madam, you don't know what you're talking about. That is not mine to decide. I have nothing to say about it. My Father only. God the Father will decide who will be on my right hand and my left. I can't do it. That's out of my hands. And let me tell you, the head of this church is alive. Do you believe it? Jesus Christ, do we believe he lives? Do we believe he's on the job? Do we believe if I need correction that he is able to see it and give it? Well, let me tell you, I believe it. I believe it through and through, and I fear it. I tremble at it. If anything should happen to me, and it'll only happen if God allows it, God can keep me alive as long as that is necessary. And he will, as long as he feels it's necessary. And I don't think he's going to take me from this work until this job is finished. But if he should, if I should be wrong about that, can you trust the living Christ to provide the man that will take over? If you'd ask me to choose, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't know who to choose right now. And I have no authority to do it. This is going to be a test of your faith. Or do you want to take it in your own hands and know who's going to be someone you can know in advance, someone you can approve, someone you can vote for? Oh, sometimes I say shame on us. Let's wake up. Now let's see. See if I can find my place here. Then spake Haggai, the Eternal's messenger, in the Eternal's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Eternal. I think that's where I was. And we need to realize that he is with us. And he's going to take care of his part of it. I am not here because a lot of people decided to vote for me or put me here. You had nothing to do with me becoming God's apostle. Someone says to me, well, Mr. Armstrong, how do you know you're God's apostle? Did Christ appear to you? Did he speak to you? Did he say, now, Herbert Armstrong, I make you my apostle? I answer, no. Did you know back in 1933 when this era of the church was started that you were God's apostle, that you would be? No, I didn't. Did you know how big or how great this work was going to be? No, I didn't. I just knew that God had called me and he was using me and I would go as far as he wanted me to go, no further and no less. Whatever that is, if it meant the whole world, I knew I would be able to do it, because I would do it in the power and the strength of the living Christ. Well, then how do I know today? Well, I will answer just as Jesus Christ answered when the messengers of John the Baptist came to him and said, well, John wants to know, are you really the Messiah that was to come? Jesus didn't say yes or no. He says, you go tell John what you hear and what you see being done. Go and show him the fruits of what you see coming from me. By their fruits you shall know. No, back in 1933, I didn't know. Well, how do I know now? Because I look back in all these years and I see the fruits, and you're here part of it. You're part of the evidence, because you're here. And I had something to do with that, and so did Jesus Christ. And he was using me. I didn't do it myself. And woe be to me if I ever take credit for doing it. The Eternal stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel and the spirit of Joshua, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people, and they came and worked on the house of the Eternal of hosts, their God, in the 20th day of the 6th month in the 2nd year of Darius the king. Now, come to chapter 2. In the 7th month, in the 21st day of the month, came the word of the Eternal to by the prophet Haggai, saying, speak now to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the high priest, and to the residue of the people, saying, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? Meaning Solomon's temple, that had such great glory, more than any building that had ever been built up to that time on the face of the earth. And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes, in comparison of it, as nothing? Well, it had been completely torn down, demolished, it was gone. Yet, now be strong, O Zerubbabel, says the Eternal, and be strong, O Joshua, be strong, all you people of the land, says the Eternal, and work, for I am with you. And he says to us today to be strong and work and get back to this thing. Now, I tell you, if you look into the New Testament, you will see that Christ did not train all of the people, and there were, within a few days after the day of Pentecost, it might have been the very next day, the church had grown up to a total of 5,000 people. But Jesus Christ had not taught them how to go out and carry the gospel message. It was only those that became his apostles. Later, he taught and apparently appeared after he had gone to heaven, and yet came down and appeared to Paul the apostle in Arabia and taught him just as he had taught the other apostles. God sent them. Apostle is a word that means one sent forth. One sent forth. I am sent forth. And if I go forth and leave here, some people say, well, why isn't Mr. Armstrong staying here in Pasadena and taking care of the church? I'll tell you why. The church is supposed to help me, not me to take care of you. I am one sent forth with the gospel message. That's what God has laid on me. Christ didn't work from 9 till 5 in an office. He went from one city to another. Christ, there's a great deal of evidence that he had even gone over to Britain and to Western Europe. That was before he started preaching, however, at the age of 30. and there's nothing in the Bible about it. But there is other evidence that he probably was there. I've often thought that he probably was at the very place that is the site of the Ambassador College in Brickett Wood in England. And there we have five of the most beautiful cedars of Lebanon, and there are not over 20 or 30 cedars of Lebanon left in Lebanon. They're up high on a mountain. I've seen them and photographed them. They've all been cut down, but the most beautiful of all are on our own campus over there. And I think, though, that we're about to consummate a sale of it because we have no further use for it now. Now, let's see. I'm losing my place here. For I am with you, says the Eternal of Hosts. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. Brethren, is God's spirit still with us in this church? We're getting a little bit spiritless, and we need to revive with the energy and the vitality of the Spirit of the living God. For thus says the Eternal of Hosts, yet once, and be a little while, and I will shake the heavens, and the earth, and the sea, and the dry land. Now when is that? He hasn't done that yet. Now he begins to talk about us today. That's the point I want you to see, that all of this about Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest building that temple was about the building of the real temple today to which Christ is going to come. Now, let's listen. I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, meaning Christ in that case, although they don't really desire him, and I will fill this house with glory, says the Eternal of Hosts. Now, I don't think that he ever did in that sense that is intended here, fill that second temple with glory. But now he's talking about a different temple. That was only a type of it, typical of it, a forerunner of it. Now he carries on and says, the silver is mine and the gold is mine, says the Eternal of Hosts. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former. The glory of that second temple never remotely compared to the glory of Solomon's temple, and yet he's talking about a temple that will be far greater in glory than Solomon's temple. He's talking about the temple to which Christ is coming now in our time, in our living generation. Now, keep your ears and your mind open, brethren. You're going to hear something here. And in this place will I give peace, says the Eternal of Hosts. There's no peace on earth yet. You see, it's coming when this happens. And in the 20th day of the 9th month, in the 2nd year of Darius, came the word of the Eternal by Haggai the prophet, saying, thus says the Eternal of Hosts, ask now the priests concerning the law, saying, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of a garment, and with his skirt do touch bread, or potage, or wine, or oil, or any food, shall it be holy? And the priests answered him and said, no. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priests answered and said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, says the Eternal. He's talking now about our nation today, and he's talking about our church today, and I'm going to prove it to you. And so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer there is unclean. And we better take heed. And now I pray you come consider from this day and upward, from before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Eternal, or the beginning of today's Church of God, in the Philadelphia era of the church today, since those days were when one came to an heap of 20 measures, there were but 10. When one came to the press vat for to draw out 50 vessels out of the press, there were but 20. I smote you with blasting and with mildew with hail in the labors of your hands, and yet you turn not to me, says the Eternal. He's speaking of us today, my brethren. Consider now, from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. I've marked here in my Bible, see, the glory of the second temple greater than Solomon's, No. This is speaking of the day of God and the temple yet to be built, which is the worldwide church of God. And it's pretty well built already. The fig tree and the pomegranate and the olive tree hath not brought forth. From this day I will bless you. And God has blessed this church. But we are getting very lazy in returning his blessing and being appreciative. And again the word of the Eternal came unto Haggai in the 24th day of the month, saying, speak unto Zerubbabel, the governor of Judah, saying, I will... Now, he doesn't mention Joshua the high priest now, but speak unto Zerubbabel, the governor of Judah, who was the one who was sent to build this temple. I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdom of the heathen. You know that that has been occurring in the last 4 or 5 years at the rate of one a month. The kingdoms haven't been completely overthrown. It was the throne of the kingdom being overthrown, a military coup and turning it into a military government, or the military. Now, that happened in Greece, and then about a year or more ago, the military government decided to turn it back to civilians. And it's just a change in the government, just like we have a change when we elect a new president. It's talking about a time when he would overthrow the kingdoms of the throne of kingdoms or governments all around the earth, and that never happened until now. He's speaking of today. And I will overthrow the chariots, and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. In that day, says the Eternal of Hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant. And it's talking about today and not that day. Zerubbabel was only a type, says the Eternal, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, says the Eternal of Hosts. Now, that is the entire book of Haggai, which consists of only the two chapters. Now I'd like you to turn to the third chapter of the fourth chapter, rather, of Zechariah. And the angel that talked with me, now this is the Zechariah the prophet's book, And the angel that talked with me came again and waked me as a man that is waked out of his sleep. And he said to me, and we need to wake up, brethren, he said to me, What sayest thou? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick, all of gold, with a bowl upon the top of it, and his seven lamps therein, and seven pipes to the seven lamps, which are upon the top thereof. Now, a candlestick, you'll find in Revelation, the first chapter, is symbolically referring to the church. And two olive trees by it, one upon the right and side of the bowl, and the other upon the left thereof. So I answered and spake to the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? And the angel that talked with me answered and said unto me, Knowest thou what these are and what these be? And I said, No, my Lord. Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the eternal unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Eternal of Hosts. This building is being built by the Spirit of God, not by might and power, not by brick and mortar and wood and plaster and other physical materials, but by the Spirit of God. Who art thou, O great mountain, before Zerubbabel? Thou shalt become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shouting, saying, Grace unto it, which is Christ, of course. Speaking about Christ coming and bringing forth Christ in our generation. Moreover, the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. What house is he talking about? The one to whom Christ is coming. His hands shall also finish it, and thou shalt know that the Eternal of Hosts has sent me unto you. I have taken great courage in reading that more than once. Maybe you can understand why. For who hath despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice, and they shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. And they are the eyes of the Eternal, which run to and fro over the whole earth. And so on. Now, I'd like to go back to Malachi again. And let me just say that in the New Testament, you will find that the church is built into a holy temple under the Eternal. And it talks about every joint... And every part of it is built by Christ, and it is built perfectly. Now, some are going to be cast out, but those that really are in the temple of God, in the church, are going to be here for the coming of Christ. On over now to Malachi once again. And I'd like to go right on from where I was. Now, he talked about a messenger coming to prepare the way before Christ. And as I say, you will find in a number of places, in Mark and Matthew and so on, that the one who prepared the way before Christ's first coming was John the Baptist. But I'm going to prove to you now that this is talking about not just the first coming, but a second. Let's go on reading the second verse, which I didn't read before. It says that the Lord shall suddenly come to his temple, which is the church, and And that church, by the power of God and with the Holy Spirit in it, will be made immortal, and its glory will be greater than the glory of Solomon's temple. But no human physical temple ever was or will be. Even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in, he shall come, says the Eternal of Hosts. That's speaking of Christ, and he's the messenger of the new covenant. Now, the old covenant set up the children of Israel as one of the nations of this world. But Moses was the mediator of that covenant. It was a physical covenant of a material, physical people with only physical and national and material promises. No promise of the Holy Spirit whatsoever was given to ancient Israel. Only some of the prophets. Moses will be in the kingdom of God, and some of the prophets, of course, but not the people as a whole. Now then, let's go right on. Verse 2. But who may abide the day of his coming, the coming of Christ? And who shall stand when he appeareth? This is in, if you remember, the oratorio that we have had sung. It's, I don't know whether we've had that yet on this particular stage up here or not, but we have had it here. We did have it over in the Civic Auditorium, and we brought people all the way from England for it, the Messiah. And you've heard this being sung in the Messiah. Who shall abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap, and he shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver. Now, Jesus didn't do any of these things when he came the first time, not a one of these things. And he shall purify the sons of Levi. He didn't do that when he came before. And purge them as gold and silver, and that they may offer unto the Eternal an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Eternal, as in the days of old, and as in the former years. That didn't happen when he came before. The Jews rejected him. Judah and Jerusalem, it was not a pleasant offering that was so happy and peaceful and joyous and all of that. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers. Jesus didn't come doing that when he came the first time. But when he comes to rule with a rod of iron over all nations, that's when he's going to do this. This is talking about the second coming. Now, it talks about a messenger coming before Christ. But Christ's coming is the only coming described here is the second coming. Do you think if he had John the Baptist preparing the way before the first coming of Christ, he wouldn't have someone preparing the way before his second coming? When he's coming in glory, in the power and spirit of God Almighty, in all the supernatural power to rule the whole world, and to take over the thrones of every nation on this earth. And I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers. I guess I read that. Against those that oppress the hireling in his wages, and the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from the right, and fear not me, says the Eternal of Hosts. For I am the Eternal, I change not. But some people think he's changed. Some people say, this is Old Testament stuff. This doesn't apply to us today. The only people that could have read this were a little contingent of a part of the tribe of Judah. And there might have been a little of Benjamin and Levi among them. But none of Ephraim and Manasseh, none of the ten tribes were there. And not even but a small part of Judah. And I will turn aside the stranger from the right. and that fear not me, says the Eternal of Hosts. For I am the Eternal, I change not. Some people think he does change. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. For from the days of your fathers you are gone away from mine ordinances. This is talking of us today. It's talking of the coming just before the second coming of Christ. This is a prophecy. It's not a case of some old ancient history. We need to see what the prophecy is all about here. Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, says the Eternal of Hosts. But you've said, whereunto shall we return? Yeah, we don't know where we've gotten away from God. Well, let me tell you, we have in more ways than one in this church. But he comes to this one thing. Well, a man robbed God. That is not Old Testament stuff. That's for us today. And if you think it isn't, and you think stealing is all right, and you're withholding your tithe, God have mercy on your miserable soul is all I can say. This is a prophecy. It's for now. And God says, I change not. You think he's changed today? Jesus said, you tithe with mint and ammon and so on. This ought you to have done. Why did he say you ought? Because it is commanded, and to withhold it is stealing from God. God doesn't want thieves in his church. They say there's no law, and the ministers have tried to come out, and I'm going to change all that, and any minister that doesn't want to go along with it can just get out of the church and off our payroll. Now, those are pretty strong words, and I mean every word I say. I would rather have one or two faithful ministers with me than 400 or 500 that have gone the way of Baal. And they wanted to make this a secular work and get Christ out of it. They say there is no law at all about tithing. They are misleading you, and they are liars. Now, if anyone wants to come to me and say, okay, I'll challenge you to a duel on that, all right, let him come. I'm speaking with the authority of Jesus Christ, and these others are not. Is stealing part of the law of God? Thou shalt not steal. Is that part of the law of God? It says, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. You're stealing. We ask him how, and he says, how have we robbed thee? And he answers, in tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse. And this church has been cursed with a curse, and this is one of the reasons. And I'm going to try to knock that out. I think maybe we're going to lose a few members. And you know, if you've got a crate of apples and one or two of them becomes rotten, they're going to rot the ones next to them. And that'll keep on. If you don't get them out of there, they'll rot the whole crate. Now, if we've got any rotten apples among us, I tell you, the quicker we get rid of them, the better, brethren. You're cursed with a curse. For you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring me all of the tithes into the storehouse. That's to God's church, and not just to any individual you want to. That there may be meat or food in my house. And prove me now, herewith, says the Eternal of Hosts. If I will not, he says, prove me. If I will not open up the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Brethren, back in the early days, we were, what few of us there were then, were tithing. Most of you weren't in the church yet. I'm talking now about 1948. Very few of you were in the church in 1948. There may be three or four here. I doubt if there's any more than that. And if you are, you're pretty faithful to have still been here all that time. But in 1948, we were going to lose all of the campus that we had at that time. And we had to come up. I didn't know how much money, but I found out later it was going to take $50,000. At that time, how much do you think was the income of the church? The whole work of God was averaging $500 a day. Now, we thought that was pretty big. That was pretty big compared to where it had been when I had to hitchhike in order to preach in the country schoolhouse. And the only reason I had to go out to the country schoolhouse was because I didn't have money to hire a hall in town. And I could get the country schoolhouse without any charge whatsoever. That's the way this work was built. Others that have come on later say, oh, I've devoted my life for the last so many years to this work. But you didn't go through the hell that I did to start it. I lived and I slept and bled and died that this church could be built and this work could go on and that the Ambassador College could be built. And we were going to have to turn a lease and option on what is now just a library building into a sale, and there had to be back taxes and property tax and insurance to be paid. And what I didn't know is that the man we were purchasing it from had also borrowed about $17,000 or $18,000 that he was delinquent on and he had not paid. And he couldn't turn it over to us until that was paid, and we had to have enough money to pay him that much before we could even get the property. I had done everything I knew how. I had sent letters telling people of the situation, but the money didn't come. I had gone, and this was before Mr. Rader's time, when we had Bolivar O'Rear, who had been for some 10 years an attorney in the Internal Revenue Department at Washington, D.C. And Mr. O'Rear died a good many years ago now, but he was our attorney at the time. And he and I went to Washington and to a lawyer friend of his that he thought was a specialist in this kind of thing and could help us raise the money. We tried every way we could, and the money didn't come. Then I got on my knees, and I asked some others, let's fast and pray, and let's take it to the Lord Jesus Christ. And we did. And you know that about Thanksgiving time, I had to have this by about the 15th of December. And about Thanksgiving time, lo and behold, one day, instead of the $500, $3,000. I believe it was $3,000 came in. I've got to go back. I've printed this before. Some of you may remember it better than I do. I believe it was $3,000. Anyhow, the next day, to our amazement, $3,000 came in, and we couldn't account for it. But we had fasted and prayed, and we had put it up to Christ. And that kept up for over 10 days until we had over $50,000 on hand. I finally came to find out that we had to have more money than I dreamed of, but Christ had answered and had sent every bit of it. I know, I've been through this. I've seen the answers to prayer. I know that Christ is living. I know that He hears us when we pray. And some of you have never had that experience. It's time that some of you get it. Get down on your knees and wear them out. I'll buy you a new pair of stockings or trousers or whatever if you wear them out. And some of you may need it. But this church is cursed with a curse if we don't tithe. So I'm going to correct that no matter come hell or high water or whatever else. And if some of our ministers say, oh, well, we're not for tithing. All right, goodbye. The Baptists probably will open up for you. They don't believe in it either. Maybe you can get a job with the Methodist. Maybe they like the man that came to me up in Oregon about 35 years ago. And he said, no, this was about 40 years ago. Anyhow, this man came to me and he said, well, I've just recently married. And he said, now I've got a wife to support. And he said, I'm a minister, but I have not had a pastor for some years. I've been out of employment. He said, Mr. Armstrong, do you know of a vacant pastorate in some church in this county? He says, I have to be in this county because my wife wants to live here. Well, I said, I know of just one. And so far as I know, that's the only one, but I said, that won't help you a bit. Well, he said, why? I said, because that's the Church of Christ, and you're a Methodist, and you'd have to preach different doctrines than the Methodists believe if you... Well, he said, that's all right. I'll preach whatever they want me to. I just got to have a job. That's the way it is. Now, if we've got on that kind of ministers, I'll be very happy to say good riddance. And God will supply us with men filled with His Spirit. Well, and he goes on to show the blessings He'll pour out there, and if we do obey Him and we trust Him, can you believe that Christ is alive? Are you worried about if anything happens to me? I'm not. I know that God will do one or two things. He'll either keep me alive or He'll raise up the right man that'll be His man. And it won't be someone that you people are going to vote on. You have nothing to say about it. You have nothing to say about the fact that I'm where I am. Christ did it. And there's no way you could have stopped it, is there? Christ put me in, and all of you put together couldn't put me out. Not if you wanted to. Some have said the church would desert me in the last 3 or 4 months of some of the actions that Christ has led me to take. The church is 100% solid, believe you me, brethren. The church is solid, and we're not divided any longer. Up until 2 or 3 months ago, for the last 10 years, this church has been divided, and people have said, well, who's in charge around here? There's no doubt about who's in charge anymore now. Then they tried to say this thing that I was old and imbecilic and that I have become senile in my mind. And even one of our main, who used to be one of our main ministers, and I am just shocked that I heard this on a tape and heard his sermon that was preached in one of our other auditorium, but not this one, of saying when he was changing a doctrine that I have taught all these years, and which is true, and I'll challenge him if he wants a debate on it. And he said, of course, now Mr. Armstrong is old and feeble, and we just have to consider him as a sort of a father figure. And some of you will remember, you've heard this sermon. I won't tell you who it was, but some of you will know. He said his mind wouldn't be capable of going into this. Well, let me tell you, my mind is a lot more capable than his mind. And it's going to be the way Jesus Christ shows me. And not the way some scholarly someone wants to get in a scholarly kind of a non-Christian type of attitude, with a carnal mind instead of the spiritual mind of Christ, and get into this leaven of intellectualism and higher education that's being kicked right out of this college and out of God's church. Well, there are many promises here. Let's prove God. He says, prove Him if He won't do this. I've been proving Him. He's taken care of me all these years. So I think that I'd like to go on and read all the rest of that in the fourth chapter, but I think we've taken up enough time tonight. And I will tell you that 2 weeks ago when I spoke here, I'd had a very busy day all day. I'd been in the office. I had conference after conference with so many different ones, and some of it a little more strenuous than others. And then I finally had to work out something to say for the Bible study that night. And I tell you, when I got home that night after the Bible study, my blood pressure was down to an alarming place. It was really alarming. And my life was in danger. But I was just exhausted. I was tired. I had been overreaching and going a little faster, and I haven't regained full physical strength yet. Let me say I've regained about 80% of it, but my mind is 100%. My mind is better today than it was 20 and 30 and even 40 years ago. It is actually better. And you be the judge by what you're hearing and what you are reading and what you're seeing. I've been turning out more articles and more books, and there's a big book ready to go to press now that'll be on a book sold in bookstores all over the United States. The first time I've ever been willing to do that. But there is a great audience of people that will not ever read the plain truth, will not reply from any of our broadcasts or telecasts, are not going to be reached by us now. But they do go into bookstores and buy books. And if it's offered free, they won't take it. They want to pay for it. So we're going to let them pay for it. That's what they want. And I'm going to make it the highest price that the experts tell me will sell. Now, I'm not going to make it $50 a copy because it wouldn't sell enough. But it would probably be in the neighborhood of, say, $9.90 or $10. If thing is $10, in this day and age, you know, the businessmen always have to cut it down to about $9.99. Sounds less. They always try to fool the people. I don't believe in that. So maybe we'll just put a straight price on them and let it go at that. But I turned most of that copy over today. I still have to write one or two chapters. But that will be done within the next two or three days. And I will tell you this. I consider that it is the most important book, the most important writing that has been written through any human being or by any human being in the last 1,900 years. That's how important I consider it. Now, it has already appeared, most of it, in The Plain Truth of 2 years or more ago in the tabloid edition, but I doubt if you read it. I told the one who was then the managing editor that I wanted this put in big type and I wanted it right up front. But he got orders. I was apparently not the boss and I didn't know it. This was kept from me. Boy, would I have countermanded that if I had known. He was told, bury it in the back and put it in the kind of type that nobody will read it. And that's what happened. Well, those days are gone. Nobody else is going to say, just countermand what Herbert W. Armstrong says. No one but Jesus Christ. I mean, but no one. So, I hope that'll be ready by the Feast of Tabernacles. And I don't know, books of that kind go out to the bookstores about twice a year, once in the fall and once in the spring. And we're hoping that if I don't extend myself too far, that we'll have it ready for the fall. But anyway, I don't overextend myself now tonight. And I'm going to rest you and let you go home and get some rest. Now, tomorrow afternoon, I expect to speak with the cameras. As you see, they're all here. And it will be the message that I will not have a message for you people tomorrow, but you can sit in on it. It will be the message that will be televised and sent to every feast site in the world. I can't appear at all of the feast sites from the United States and Canada this year, as I've done in past years, but I will appear at every feast site on the screen, and it'll be shown on 16-millimeter film on good-sized screens like the big one that we have up here when they let it down under the curtains, in every feast site all over the world. Not just the United States, but Australia, South Africa, South America, New Zealand, everywhere. And I will be doing that now tomorrow. And I still have to prepare that tomorrow, before tomorrow night. So I always have something to do. Well, I'm working harder now than I worked 10 years, 15 years ago, even 20 years ago. And I'm having to come back and do it. God will give me the strength and the energy and the vitality. But will you let him give you the strength and energy and vitality you need for your part, brother? The apostle is the one sent, not you. You are to back. And you will find in the New Testament the church didn't go out. The apostles went out. Then there was one who had the Holy Spirit and had been a deacon who went out preaching, and that was Philip. And God bless him, because he had been with the apostles, but he then became a minister and became an evangelist. But the people as a whole were just back of those sent. An apostle is a word that means one sent forth with Christ's message. And I just look back at the fruits of the last 51 years, and I know by the same way that John the Baptist knew whether Christ was the real Messiah or not. I know. Because by the fruit you know. And that's how I know. Now have a good night's sleep, and I think I'm not as badly worn out as I was 2 weeks ago tonight, and I hope I'll have a good night's sleep, and I'll see you tomorrow afternoon.